Great. I think let's get into it. Good morning, everybody. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Peter. I'm a partner with MPM Legal. We're a specialist employment law and business immigration practice based in the south of England, but we work with clients that are all over the world. We have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK. Delighted as ever to be joined by my colleague, Adrienne. Good morning, Adrienne.
Morning. I just like the way, can I just say that in your opening spiel, as always, you just did this little pause between employment and law. You went employment law.
Oh, yeah. Taking a
Is
breath
that a
to
sign of things to
calm
come?
down. Yeah, I think so. But I've also noticed that you're apparently Peter Beastie as well today. So
Oh, am I?
there are
Well,
two of
sorry.
us called Peter, which is nice. I've not met anybody else with the same name as me before.
There you go. I'm just cloning you.
this session today is part two of our two-part session on the Employment Rights Bill, which is obviously what lots and lots of employment lawyers are talking about because of all the massive change that is coming through. Just a couple of housekeeping tips. If you are joining us live today, by all means, ask some questions using the Q&A function down at the bottom. Or if you want to chat to other participants, you can do that using the chat function. We'll try and answer questions as we go along. If you're listening to this on the recording, then everything we're talking about is relevant as at today's date, which is the 7th of November 2024. And we know that the government are consulting on lots of aspects around the Employment Rights Bill. They've started some consultations already. They're launching some soon as well on other matters. So it's pretty fluid, right? It might all change. We've got the draft bill at the moment, but we of course don't know exactly what's going to be coming into force in probably about 18 months' time. The first session that we did 2 weeks ago, you can get the recording on Spotify, video recordings on our website, MPM Legal. We were looking then at probably the more kind of populist type changes. So things like statute
Unpopulist.
or unpopulist. Yeah. And depending on your viewpoint.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, tell us what you think. Because there's been a lot of chatter about it. But things like statutory probationary period, day one unfair dismissal rights, what amounts to pretty much a blanket ban on fire and rehire, changes to collective redundancy processes. There are a couple of things we did a deep dive in our roundtable session for HR leaders yesterday. So we're talking about those in detail. What are we looking at today, though, Adrienne, in this part two?
Right, back to the back to part two. So, well, there's an awful lot going on this employment rights bill. As Peter said, consultation with a view to implementation in a couple of years, but there are no less than 28 different changes proposed. And today we're going to look at some of the less well-reported changes, which are still going to be significant. So we're going to kick off, and I'm handing this straight back to Peter, with trade union reform. And actually, I think this is going to be quite a big area. So talk us through that, Peter.
Yeah, it is a big area. What I'll say about this, some of you may have seen the fact sheets that the government have released. So, aside from the Employment Rights Bill draft, there's an explanatory note, if you're interested enough to have a look at that, some light bedtime reading. But then what they've produced are these, it's probably like 10 or 11 different fact sheets about various aspects. So have a look for those. I'll probably put the link to them on LinkedIn afterwards, actually, just so you can click through. If I tell you that the fact sheet on probationary periods, I think, is something like 2 pages, maybe 2.5 pages at most. The fact sheet that deals with the trade union reform stretches to 13, 13 and a half pages. So that just gives an indication of how much change there is in this space. Now, there are some really detailed trade union specific changes that I'm not going to go into detail on today because it is things like detailed provision on expenditure from political funds over £2,000 and extra requirements for union supervision of picketing and appointments of picketing supervisors. These changes are not going to directly affect a lot of you who are on the call today or listening to this. Maybe the picketing supervisor aspects if you're facing a potential strike. But if you're into that scenario, you're obviously going to take, and it's important you do take specific legal advice at the time because there are a lot of technicalities around the union rules. What I am going to talk about, though, are the changes to how unions might be recognised. So that basically means when an employer and a union have a formal arrangement for dealing with issues, so recognition of a trade union, workplace access for trade unions as well, and new protections for trade union reps. Now, what is it that's driving these changes? Well, what the government say is that they believe strong collective bargaining rights and the institutions that underpin it are really key to tackling the problems of insecurity, inequality, discrimination, enforcement, and low pay. And when workers are empowered to act as a collective, they can secure better pay and conditions. It's all about enhancing those employment rights and the conditions that people work under, which, frankly, is not surprising from a Labour government. It's what you would expect to see in place. Now, the first big change is that the Employment Rights Bill will repeal another act that's called the Trade Union Act from 2016. Almost all of it is proposed to be repealed. Now, why is that important? Well, the Trade Union Act imposed various limitations on things like strikes, notice periods associated with strike action, restrictions on picketing, balloting thresholds for certain public services, and industrial action mandates for 6 months as well. So when a union is balloting its members to be able to go on strike, the mandate from the members to be able to take that industrial action is time limited, and the government are looking at extending the time to which it applies. So what the government are doing is consulting at the moment on measures to simplify the information which unions must provide to employers in notices of ballots and industrial actions. So I know some of you that are listening will have been in this scenario because we've worked on certain projects together where we've seen notices of ballots, and we know what the industrial action process looks like. Some of you thankfully won't have been in that scenario. I think in the future, given the direction of travel in terms of the government wanting to open up more access to unions to make the recognition process easier, it is conceivable that more of you will be caught, and this will come into your space more than it has perhaps in the past. The government, through these changes, also want to limit how you as businesses can seek injunctions against industrial action. So typically where we see that is if the union hasn't complied with certain legal requirements, statutory notice requirements about taking industrial action. And because there are so many humps and hoops, I was going to say, and hurdles to jump through, but humps through, so many hurdles to jump over to get to that point, there's scope for a business to go to the court and say, "Hey, judge, we'd like an injunction that forces the union to stop taking this action, which is not compliant. It's unlawful," and the government wants to limit how that can happen. And finally, it's also consulting on extending the expiry of a mandate for industrial action from that 6 month limit that it is at the moment to the 12 month period. So when you get the mandate from the members to strike, limited at the moment to a 6 month window, the government are saying, well, we think that should be a 12 month window. So quite a lot of change there. But what access to workplace is important as well, isn't it?
I think this is the scariest bit. Or, well, again, you're probably going to reprimand me to say it depends on your outlook. But if you're an employer who has traditionally been resisting the unions or doesn't really want union recognition, then I think it's fair to call it scary, because this is a new introduction, access to the workplace for the unions. Because at the moment, under the current law, the unions don't have the independent right of access to workplaces and can only exercise their functions through individual members in the workplace. And of course, where you've got limited membership, there's also limited scope for collective bargaining and for trade unions to exercise their functions. So the proposed changes in this new bill are basically to provide a framework for agreements between employers and trade unions to give unions the right of access to the workplace. So you'd think, right, okay, so the union writes to you and says, I want to access your workplace, and you think, well, not a chance. That's not the end of the story. So in essence, there's going to be a similar type of process where they can request access to the workplace. You will have the opportunity, like you do at the moment under trade union recognition, to negotiate voluntarily to reach an agreement to allow the union to access the workplace. But If you don't reach agreement or you don't want it, the trade union can run off to the Central Arbitration Committee, the CAC, which is the body that's responsible at the moment for any disputes between employers and unions when it comes to the recognition process. And they can ask for an order to come and access your workplace. I think it's fair to say that a lot of the detail around what that might look like is yet to come out under different regulations and what the sort of like default agreement might be. But basically, where you end up with an access agreement in place, trade union officials can then come in, they can access the workplace with you because they'll have your consent. And basically, what it means is you are being forced to prop the door open to allow the trade unions to come in, to campaign for membership amongst your employees, to, you know, recruit, to organise, and basically to facilitate the collective bargaining process. So I think the way that I see this is a pretty massive change to give the unions a foothold in businesses where traditionally they don't have the recognition that they have already. So yeah, so it's I mean I think that's a big change, don't you, Peter? You're on mute.
I'm muted.
You're muted, yeah.
I tell you why I'm muted. I was just thinking, actually, I'll probably try and launch a poll asking about trade union recognition, because I am just curious to know how many people joining today, the businesses that you represent, actually recognize a trade union. But yeah, it's a massive change. I mean, I know I can think off the top of my head of three businesses that we support that this year have, for the first time, recognized trade unions. One through the compulsory method, and two on a voluntary basis. So that kind of neatly transitions me into the next point that I wanted to discuss, just still on this topic of trade unions. We're going to move on to the other stuff shortly, but
Before you do that,
yeah.
sorry, there was just one thing that I wanted to say. Access to workplaces. The trade unions were campaigning for that to be not just physical access, which is what's mooted under this bill, but digital rights of access, you know, to capture all those employers who will be working remotely, digitally, may not have office premises, etc. But as I understand it, these access rights are going to be to physical spaces only. Sorry, I just wanted to add that
Yeah, no, it's right, because
before you move
unions have
forward.
been, it's an important point, because the unions have been pushing for digital
Yeah.
access. Somebody's asked a question: is this all stuff that's absolutely been agreed already? The answer is no. So everything we're talking about in this session, and everything we talked about 2 weeks ago in the first part of this, they're all draft proposals at the moment. So it's a draft bill. So think of it as a first pass at a new piece of legislation. And it is subject to change. Now, actually, somebody else has asked how much, given that this is going to affect all businesses of all sizes, how much of this is likely to change? You know, is it going to apply to all businesses uniformly? We don't know. I mean, this is the draft, and in theory, it could all just be voted through and passed and come onto the statute books and take legal effect. I mean, we think, I'm sure, Adrian, don't we, that there are going to be tweaks to all of the
Yeah.
provisions we've been talking about, whether it's reducing the mandatory probationary period from 9 months that's currently proposed down to 6 months, and
Yeah.
other stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's also the sort of the magic words within most sort of primary legislation, which says the Secretary of State may make regulations to bring into force certain parts of the bill. And sometimes those regulations take an awful long time to actually be put into place. So, yeah, I think the answer to that is, I think this is a topic that we need to have our eyes on, but until we actually know what comes out and when it comes into force through consultation, through secondary legislation, it's really difficult to say what's going to come in and what's not. I think what I would say, though, is under this government, the direction of channel of travel when it comes to the trade unions is definitely going to be in the absolutely opposite direction from that we saw under the previous government.
Oh yeah, without a
And
doubt.
you know, without a doubt. So I think, you know, in there's going to be an awful lot of gives towards the unions. All of this may not go through, but I would think a lot of it probably will.
Okay, I'm going to talk about the recognition process and some of the changes there. I'm just going to launch this poll. Forgive me, because I did it on the fly. So it is called, and hopefully untitled, poll number 14. I'm just interested to know how many of you recognize or in businesses that recognize a trade union at the moment. So let me just let that run for a bit. I mean, as I'd expect, it's looking at most of you don't. Yeah, okay. Probably about a fifth of you, about a fifth of you do actually. Some people probably got us running in the background, not looking at the screen.
Yeah.
But have a vote. I'll leave that running and pick up on that in a sec. In terms of this change then, for those of you that aren't too familiar with this, the way the recognition process works is there's a scope for voluntary recognition. So, simply this is union approaches an employer and says, hey, we think we've got a groundswell of support for the union within your business, and we'd like to come to an agreement with you. Let's enter into this recognition agreement on a voluntary basis. And here are some rules about what we're going to negotiate with you on, how the negotiation process works, what access we can have, how many union reps there'll be, all that type of stuff. And as a company, you might say, yeah, okay, well, we can see that you've got a groundswell of support, so we're going to recognize you, and then we'll just deal with you for collective consultation purposes. Obviously, understandably, in some cases, a business will say either, well, no, we don't want to recognize you, or we don't want to recognize you because we don't think you've got that groundswell of support. And if that happens, the union's got the ability to go to an independent arbiter, the Central Arbitration Committee, the CAC. And they were set up, I think, in 1999, in its current format, to deal with applications for compulsory recognition. So this is where a business is forced to recognise a trade union through a particular process. And we've been involved in kind of more examples of that in the last 2 or 3 years than in the previous 15 years, I think, in terms of what we've seen. Now, since 1999, the number of recognition cases and applications that go to the CAC has really fluctuated. There's no real pattern to it. But on average, the CAC receives 60 trade union recognition cases per year. So it's quite a lot. Now, that statutory recognition scheme, so the rules around how it all works when a union wants to force an employer to recognise it, are really complex. But in summary, the union's got to show that they've got 10% membership of the proposed bargaining unit, so the bit of the business they want to represent employees in. And secondly, that they're likely to have a majority in a trade union ballot, so more people than not will vote positively. Where a union's got a majority in the bargaining unit, the CAC can decide to automatically recognise the union. So they'll look at it and go, yeah, employer, you've got to recognise this union now based on the information we've seen. However, that doesn't always happen. The CAC may still hold a ballot if it gets evidence that the workers want a ballot to take place, or there's doubts about whether the union's got a majority or not, or if the CAC thinks that a ballot would help further industrial relations. And the government have looked at all of this and said, look, we think we just need to simplify this entire framework. And part of the reason for that is we want workers to have a meaningful right to be able to organize amongst themselves through trade unions. The government have looked at these rules and they think, well, there's a really significant hurdle here in terms of demonstrating a majority. And that's especially so in the way that businesses are currently set up in an increasingly fragmented way. So, it's not the case anymore, that businesses are always geographically proximate in terms of their different functions. Kind of these organizations spread throughout the UK. So, what is the bill looking at doing? Well, it's amending the statutory recognition process by removing the requirement for unions to have the support of at least 40% of the workforce in the proposed bargaining unit. So, they're saying the unions will only need a simple majority of the people voting to actually win. They are removing the requirement for a union to demonstrate on application to the CAC that they're likely to win a recognition ballot. So they need to show they have 10% membership within the bargaining unit. So 10% membership within the bit of the business they want to be recognised in order for that application to be accepted by the CAC. And they want to give ministers in the future the power to vary that 10% membership requirement to bring it down as low as 2%. So I know that's like a whole bunch of technical stuff around quite a niche area, but the takeaway is if this goes through, it will be a heck of a lot easier for trade unions to force recognition through via the CAC. So that's something to be mindful of.
I'm just going to add something there as well, because I've not had that much involvement in sort of like this like kind of nitty gritty, but where I have, it's always been a bun fight over what the actual bargaining unit is having, because that's always something to think about. That's a way of looking at the figures. So have the unions put forward the right bargaining unit? Do you say it's bigger? In which case does that water down the minimum levels that have all been talked about? So, that's something that is potentially still out there. But as Peter said, this goes hand in hand with the ethos of them making it easier for trade unions to come into the workplaces, to support the people that they're looking to support. So anyway, can we leave unions
That's
behind?
probably enough union stuff
That's
for
enough
today
union
morning, isn't
stuff.
it? Yeah, yeah.
Let's get back into the nitty-gritty of something that we probably deal with pretty much all of us on a daily basis: sickness absences. Now, this is straightforward. I'm sure you've all read it, but it would be remiss of us not to cover it in one of these sessions. SSP, always weird, I thought, that SSP didn't get paid for the first 3 days of absence. Well, that's going to change, and so it's now going to be paid from day one of sickness. I mean, I did think it was an anomaly, but and probably messed up people doing payroll, etc. And also the lower earnings limit will be removed so that all eligible employees, regardless of earnings, will now be entitled to SSP. That's all I've got to say on sick pay. You're going to talk
Yeah,
about
that's quite a neat change, that isn't it?
well, thank God it's a bit less complicated than talking about trade union changes, goodness.
Incidentally, those of you that responded to the poll, and thank you, 16% of organisations on here have a recognised trade union. I suspect if we run that poll in 3 years' time, the numbers will be a bit different. I think more of you will end up recognizing a trade union either on a voluntary basis, can you see what's coming, or as a result of being forced to via the CAC statutory recognition route. So I'll give myself a diary reminder to look at this stat 3 years from now when we're doing our webinars again. What I want to talk about next, actually three things together, really, and that's day one bereavement leave, unpaid parental leave, and entitlement to paternity leave, so all family-related rights. There's, in terms of bereavement leave, at the moment, there isn't a statutory right for employees to take bereavement leave following a death, apart from parents who lose a child under the age of 18. Now, we know that most employers do respond compassionately to requests for time off in those circumstances. But the fact that there's no legislative framework for it does mean that employees are at the mercy of their employer and, reliant on working for an employer that is understanding and is compassionate enough to recognise the need for time off. And not everybody has that privilege, unfortunately. When it comes to paternity leave and unpaid parental leave, you probably all know that at the moment, an employee's got to work for their employer for 26 weeks before they're eligible for paternity leave and a year before they're eligible for unpaid parental leave. So, if you're a parent and you want to take paternity leave or you want to take unpaid parental leave, if you move jobs, you lose your entitlement and you've got to then build back up that length of service with a new employer before you qualify to take the leave. And it's interesting because this is a theme that has been consistent in terms of justification for introducing day one rights, not only in the family leave space, but also in terms of unfair dismissal rights without kind of diving back into day one unfair dismissal, which we covered last time. And the argument from the government is this. It's a disincentive to growth to have restrictions on length of service requirements for these sorts of rights because people are just reluctant to want to move jobs. So they're unproductive in current jobs, wishing they could move, but being put off doing so because they're not benefiting from statutory rights, 2 years to get a redundancy payment, for example. So again, this logic is explained by the government in the explanatory note to say part of the reason we want to give day one rights is to encourage more mobility within the workforce as well. And I think, as employers, you'll probably have a view on whether you want it to be so easy for employees to be able to move from business to business. But the argument is it will increase productivity and will increase competitiveness. How's it going to work then, Adrian, in terms of the changes?
Right. Okay. So for bereavement leave, you're going to see a new statutory right. I mean, remember, we've already got the parental bereavement leave. I think that was called Jack's Law, wasn't it? Which was campaigned for on behalf of parents who sadly lost children and were not given time off work. So we've got that statutory leave at the moment for parental bereavement, which is a day one right. So there's going to be a framework for establishing details for statutory bereavement leave, no matter who has been lost, but there will obviously be eligibility requirements around your relationship with that particular person. And that's going to give the same type of protected time off for bereaved employees. The regulations that will have to come in and will be subject to consultation will also set out the length of leave, which the Employment Rights Bill says has got to be a minimum of 1 week. It will remain 2 weeks for parental bereavement leave. I would be surprised if they didn't say that it was the same, though. And that's just my commentary, whether it's going to be 1 or 2 weeks. And it'll also say, well, how long you've got to be able to take that leave. But then, if you think about it at the moment in terms of pay, if we look at the parental bereavement leave, the entitlement is to the statutory rate of pay, which is 100 and something pounds per week. And to have the entitlement to that paid time off, can't get my teeth in today. The paid time off, you've got to have 26 weeks service. So again, you can have the time off from day one, but you won't actually be paid for it until you've got 26 weeks. And I would have thought that the same is going to apply, but again, we'll have to wait and see. But many of you may have policies that are already more generous than this anyway, certainly when it comes to pay. So on paternity leave, there's no requirement for continuity of service requirements. That gives employees, that means that employees will be able to give notice of their intention to take paternity leave as soon as they join, day one in a new job. And, I think that's kind of a quite a big change. But the government said they're going to take a general review of what parental leave looks like because, we've got paternity leave, maternity leave, shared parental leave, parental leave. I mean, it's just a bit mind-boggling, really, around all the various different terms. But there we are. So, just wanted to say something finally on maternity protections. As I'm sure you all know, the period of protection for maternity returners was extended, so now it's a potential period of up to 18 months. So they get the additional period of 6 months after returning from maternity leave when it comes to getting an alternative role in a redundancy situation. So what does the bill change on this? Well, it would give the government powers to introduce regulations to cover other dismissals. So at the moment, that protection is only very specifically in relation to redundancies. And so, that's only one of the five fair reasons. So what about conduct? What about capability, etc.? What's that? That's all going to be looked at, which is quite, that is quite, quite massive as well, in my view. So, how would that sit if somebody returns from maternity leave and, ends up committing an act of misconduct? I just don't see undersee how that works. But anyway, we'll have to wait and see. There'll be protection for other forms of leave. So you've got adoption leave and shared parental leave. And I think I haven't read the explanatory notes for a couple of weeks, but I think the protection will basically mean a ban on dismissals of women who are pregnant, they're on mat leave, and during that 6 month post-return period, apart from when very specific circumstances apply. Now, specific circumstances, that's going to be the key phrase that's going to be played out. So,
Yeah, we don't know what they
no,
are yet, and it's all going to be
no.
subject to consultation. But I think, we can take from it, to link back, Elaine, I think to your question about what's going to be modified in the Employment Rights Bill generally. I am certain there is going to be more protection for maternity leavers. That there absolutely has to be, unless there's a massive U-turn. And hey, some people might say, well, we wouldn't be surprised by a U-turn, but we're very confident that there's going to be enhanced protection for maternity leavers and returners. Just before we wrap up, we just had a few more questions I just want to deal with. A couple of people have asked about the SSP change, when it's effective from, is the waiting period being removed imminently or is it in 2026? So it's not, it hasn't changed yet. And in
No.
fact, I understand the DWP have told the Chartered Institute for Payroll Professionals, I think I've got that right, CIPP, that a consultation is imminent on these changes. So like everything we've discussed in this session and the session 2 weeks ago in part one, it is all subject to consultation. But I'd be surprised if there are wholesale fundamental changes. I think we've got a really good handle in terms of the direction of travel. And if you listen 2 weeks ago, you'll know that there are some strategies that we've been suggesting. Have a listen to our probationary periods dedicated episode from July, even though it predates the Employment Rights Bill being published. Everything we talked about, I think, and speculated on within that half hour session about how to run probationary periods is still valid. It still, still holds true. Elaine asked about trade union recognitions. Does it become similar to redundancy and apply across businesses with more than one location or premises? I mean, what we see at the moment is we've got various clients that are multi-site operations, and they actually will recognise different unions at different sites, which can
Yeah.
bring its own challenges. We also have clients that don't operate at different geographical places, but they recognise more than one union at one site. So it's a joint collective agreement. So anything's possible,
I
really.
think this comes back around to the point I was saying about the bargaining unit, though, because that's something which is looked at. Now, if there's a bargaining unit that can then cross multi-sites, then fine. But most of the time, a bargaining unit is going to be a specific group of people within a particular area. So, but that's the ripe area for dispute. So, but and it's a question of knowing your employees, knowing the numbers, and working out whether you say, well, actually, the union, that's not the right bargaining unit. The right bargaining unit would be to amalgamate these together because they all work really closely. They come under the same management structure, and as I said, that could then potentially water down the support. Although, having said that, if they're going to reduce the levels to the rates they're talking about, you're probably on a bit of a hiding to nothing. But it's I'll stop talking.
No, it's right. Right. Somebody else has asked us if a recording will be made available for yesterday's meeting. So the session yesterday was our round table, which is for HR leaders and in-house counsel. We essentially work on a Chatham House rules basis. So it's a forum where people can share ideas. And we purposely don't record those sessions because we want people to be able to speak freely. And it's not like our webinars where we are talking to you, I suppose. It's a lot more engaging and people are contributing to that. So if anybody's interested in more details on that, we're doing deep dives on various aspects. So yesterday we're talking about changes to fire and rehire and the collective consultation rules. Just send me an email to my NPM legal email address and I can give you some information about how those sessions operate if you're interested in benefiting from those. In the meantime, there's absolutely loads of food for thought as a result of session one and session two. We're just going to see so much change. Like Adrian said, 28 different headline provisions. It's all going to be coming in the next sort of 18 to 24 months. Part One's podcast is on Spotify and Apple Music, so have a listen to that. As always, feel free to follow us on LinkedIn, pretty active in terms of posting updates. We'll keep you updated as we get updated on stuff as well. We're going to be running more of these sessions specifically on provisions in terms of the Employment Rights Act itself. Otherwise, we'll be back with another topic in 2 weeks' time. So we'll see you 2 weeks today at 11 o'clock. And otherwise, enjoy the rest of this week. Thanks for joining today. Thanks for your questions, and we'll see you next time.